Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're listening to Real College Podcast. I'm Jacob Maldonado Medina, and I'll be stepping in as host for this week's episode. Today's episode is dedicated to animals of all kinds, from smallmouth bass to foster pets and even chickens. You'll hear all of that and plenty more right here on Real College Podcast, which starts right now. First up on this week's episode, we had one of our reporters, Lydia Christensen, go out with a recorder and do our question of the week.
My name is Lydia Christensen, and my question of the week is, what is your favorite memory of a pet or an animal?
When I was younger, my aunt had a dog, and it humped my leg. And then for a few months, I thought I was pregnant, and I couldn't look at the dog ever again.
So when I was younger, I used to rollerblade, and the way that I learned was I went to knock on my friend's door, and their bulldog jumped out and chased me across the entire neighborhood.
I used to live in Iowa, so when we had a big hill in our backyard, and whenever we would go sledding in the wintertime, it was really fun. And one time, kind of put our dog on our sled with us, and then our dog kind of fell off halfway through.
There was one time when I had my dad's cat. I was living at my dad's house, and I was talking to my friend on the phone, and I had the slice of pie, and I set it on my table, and my cat kept kind of coming up to me as if he wanted the pie, and I'm like, the cat's not gonna eat the pie. So I'm talking to my phone, and every time I look away, the cat would get a little closer to the pie. Until at one point, he jumped up on the table as I looked away and started eating the pie.
I had a pet, he was a little black lab, his name was Jackson, and we had to give him away because every time he would go outside, and my brother would go outside, he would literally, drag my brother around the yard every time. And so after a while, we kind of couldn't control him, so we just had to give him away after that.
When I was in Vietnam, I used to live there. I'd wake up to a rooster every day. So instead of having an alarm, you hear like the rooster sound and you just wake up.
One time I was being chased by an Angus bull, which was being chased by my dog. And I scurried up the fence, and it went right through, right beside me.
Me and my brother used to eat a lot of the Little Debbie thingies when we were younger, and he always had a stash in his room under his bed because he was a fatty. So he had a big box of cosmic brownies, and my dog Diego, who's a chihuahua, got into his room somehow, because we always close the door, and he got into the cosmic brownies and ate about three of them, and I discovered him just laying on the floor sleeping off the brownies, and I thought that he was gonna die because I know that he ingested chocolate. And so we called the vet, and she said that it has to be real chocolate and that even humans shouldn't eat that stuff, but he'll be fine.
I know for me, I didn't have a pet until I was 18, but my godfather had a cat named Sasha, who was possibly the evilest cat in the entire world. And once I got up to go to the bathroom, and right as I was about to go into the bathroom, Sasha lunged at me, and I shut the door in time to not be attacked by the crazy cat. I am still terrified to this day. Our next story took me up to the Great Lakes Aquarium in Duluth. It's the world's biggest freshwater aquarium. You heard me right, freshwater. Meaning that you'll be seeing fish like bass and sturgeon, which you could probably see in a lake near you. So why have an aquarium dedicated to it? That's the question I went up to the North Shore to try to answer. When you walk into the Great Lakes Aquarium, you're met with a huge open space with lots of window letting in a ton of light and a beautiful view of Canal Park and the famous Duluth Lift Bridge. There's a huge wall with water trickling down it, and right off the bat, the aquarium was completely different than what I had imagined it to be. I was at the aquarium to talk to Jay Walker. He's the director of operations for the aquarium, and he's been with them for almost 18 years now. He's seen the aquarium go through some changes.
There's been a change in attitude toward the facility. You know, we've definitely had sort of a rocky start when we began. So there's just some local attitudes toward it have changed to being more of a positive, to having a positive impact on the community.
It seems natural that there'd be some skepticism towards the aquarium. Why would people want to see animals that they could probably see on their own? And that's been part of the challenge for the aquarium. How do you get people excited to see things that they see every day?
When you look at a pond, you know, there's pretty cool stuff going on there. There's just some really neat balance of ecosystem. There's really cool animals that live there, what we didn't even think about. And so I think for us, that was the key, is to how do we give people a connection with something that's right outside their door that you take for granted? How do we create the enthusiasm that it deserves?
For Jay, that enthusiasm can be created through some guidance and education.
It's really easy to get a connection with, say, a koala bear, right? But yet, you say, you know, sunfish, per se, or bass, or, you know, those are not your, first off, depending on who you talk to, I think they're beautiful fish, but there's a lot of people that may look at it and say, you know, they're just not as colorful as, like, a coral reef display. And then you look at some of our local animals, and they're, you know, they're green, they're brown, they're striped, you know, they live in weeds, and so you sort of have this, you're it's hard to see that beauty. Our job is to say, oh no, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on here. We just want to kind of point you in the right direction of what's cool. You know, why do you want to care about them? Like, you have to connect with an animal. And once you can make a connection, it gives you a different attitude towards it. You actually want to, you have more care for their environment that they're in. You have a more of appreciation of what they're up against, and ways that you can help make sure that their habitat stays strong, and so that the animals' health stays strong.
This idea of creating a connection between people and animals as a means to protect the animals and their environment is something that was echoed by the Minnesota Zoo. I spoke with Michael Lee, who does communications for the Minnesota Zoo. We talked about the Medtronic Minnesota Trail, which features animals from around Minnesota.
The core mission of the Minnesota Zoo, everything revolves down to saving wildlife. So our mission is to connect people, animals, and the natural world to save wildlife. And so a big thing for us here at the Minnesota Zoo is, if we aren't educating people about the species that people can find in their backyards, one, a lot of people will take them for granted, and then two, it's really hard for people to have that passion or that empathy to want to protect them in the wild, or at least their spaces, the natural environment that we live in.
Jay is one of those people who really has a love for the animals and their environment. He's so passionate about it that I assumed he'd always wanted to work with freshwater fish when he was growing up, but it turns out that was far from the case.
I was actually a music major to begin with, and that's what I wanted to teach music. And it was quite some time ago now. I was in Baltimore, and there's a aquarium there called the National Aquarium of Baltimore. It's in the Inner Harbor. But went to the aquarium and was just blown away. I was like, oh, this is what I want to do, you know. And I think it was actually at the dolphin show when I watched these beautiful dolphins flipping in the air. I'm like, this is what I'm going to do. I want to do this the rest of my life. Started my college career as. It was a technical program in aquaculture. And that's focused on freshwater animals. It had the same sort of ideas and principles to taking care of animals in an aquarium. In a saltwater, but I really was focused on saltwater. That's what I wanted to do at that time. But at the whole time that I'm going to school about this, I'm also learning about freshwater fish and learning about freshwater environments. And even though I kept trying to take this avenue of wanting to learn about saltwater species, I kept kind of getting knocked in the noggin of these cool things that are happening in freshwater.
Jay's first job in an aquarium was at Underwater World at the Mall of America, which is now known as Sea Life.
I've had my dream to finally start working with saltwater fish, but yet I found myself kind of gravitating more with the freshwater fish because I had learned so much about it and realized that not as many people were paying attention. Professionally, I took a job as the curator of the aquarium here, and so it was a step in a different direction for me, a step up in my career, but then also it was a really exciting project that was going on, and it was unique as to what we were doing because it was going to be the world's largest freshwater aquarium, as we've been talking about. I was really excited at the opportunity to come up and to actually have a facility that focused on freshwater. It was a real was definitely a challenge and different, and yeah, it just that was one of the a lot of different reasons why I wanted to come up this way.
And you can tell that Jay just really loves his job. He showed me around the entire aquarium, and at every exhibit, he had a story to tell.
Right over here, we have the our Lake Superior display, which I'm really proud of. It's our largest aquarium in the facility. It's 45,000 gallons. It's 26 feet deep. It's filled with lake trout and different species of trout and eel pout and sturgeon, and I'll show you that in a second. And then, of course, right here, we have the otters. And I was showing my mom this facility when we opened it, and I was very proud of it. I'm like, oh, look at this tank. And we just got done looking at the otters. And I'm like, oh, what do you think of this aquarium? She goes, yeah, our fish are kind of boring, aren't they? I'm like, oh, we didn't reach that one. But she's like, oh, let's go look at the otters again. All right, we'll go look at the otters again.
Hearing Jay talk about the aquarium made me interested. I wanted to hear about the smallmouth bass, which, for the record, are Jay's favorite fish. By the end of the tour, Jay had done what he had set out to do. He showed me that there's a lot of cool stuff going on with the local animals, and it's worth taking a look at. For Real College Podcast, I'm Jacob Maldonado Medina. Animal rescue centers have made a huge impact in our society. Statistics show that the success of these animal shelters is reflected by the support from the communities. In fact, with the help of foster families, the Animal Humane Society says they were able to place more than 95% of last year's animals into loving homes and other welfare organizations. Here in the Twin Cities, we have a lot of organizations and foster families working to make a difference. For this week's show, reporter Kayla Song interviewed two members of this foster community to learn more about what that experience is like.
I foster through Secondhand Hounds. They're located out of the South Metro area. So it's about a 20-minute drive away in Edina, I believe.
That's Madeline Carpentier, junior and rookie fosterer at the University of Minnesota.
But Secondhand Hounds isn't the only rescue that does this foster opportunities for people like students. I think Rough Start is another really popular one for the metro area. And I actually think you can foster kittens through the Animal Humane Society. So certainly Secondhand Hounds isn't the only foster organization. There are many to choose from. You just have to Google Foster Minnesota and basically 20 will pop up. So,
over the last few months, Madeline has fostered a pit bull, two kittens, and a pit bull border collie mix. All these animals have their own unique but hard backgrounds.
A lot of these animals come from puppy mills or, you know, they were seized by animal control. So a lot of them don't have the best background. And so when they come into foster homes, the foster pets are timid. They're having a lot of accidents. They're not trained. Definitely the hardest part of fostering is getting them from this really low point in their life to being a really loving, well-behaved animal and then having to give them away.
Not only does fostering give them a new chance at life, but it also benefits the owner.
Well, for me, I certainly know that having a pet around, it's a great motivation. I know I personally have issues with sleeping in too late, and when you have a foster dog gnawing at your foot at 6 o'clock in the morning, it definitely gets your day going. Also, coming home to an animal who unconditionally loves you is certainly amazing. So I know for me that fostering an animal or just having, you know, especially the foster dogs around, it was really uplifting.
Fostering isn't just offering the animals a transition between living in a shelter to living with a family. Some foster animals are being trained for a higher purpose. Helping Paws, another foster organization, gives foster families the opportunity to train dogs to become service animals. Meet Colleen McCuskey, another junior at the University of Minnesota, who has been training her golden retriever Brinkley for the past 3 years to do service work.
So there's a lot of training that we go through and have done with Brinkley, and he can do everything from turning on a light to opening a door for someone if he was placed with someone in a wheelchair. So last November, actually, we got Brinkley's nephew to start training as a service dog. And so we've had him for a few months now, and I've started training on things like pushing cabinet doors shut and being able to walk next to someone without pulling the leash.
While training service dogs takes a lot of work, Colleen says it's definitely a rewarding experience knowing that Brinkley will go on to make a difference in someone's life.
The organization that we work with works with two different groups of people that they place their dogs with. One is veterans with PTSD, and then the other is people with physical disabilities. And so they're all trained with the same skills, and then depending on which person they're placed with depends on or determines what skills will really be strengthened and what they'll definitely use. But they can open doors for people in wheelchairs. If someone has PTSD, then they don't have to go upstairs to bed in the dark, and the dog can run up ahead of time and turn on the light for them.
Service animal or not, foster families can make a big difference in any animal's life.
You get to love them, and then you also get to pass on all that love to someone else.
Ready to try fostering for yourself? You can send in an application to foster with Secondhand Hounds in Eden Prairie or Helping Paws in Hopkins. Applications and more information on how to foster can be found on their websites. For Real College Podcast, I'm Kayla Song.
In 2012, the Pioneer Press reported on a population of 1,500 chicken in Minneapolis. This was in the dawn of the new nationwide backyard chicken trend, which everybody was reporting on, the New York Times, NBC, even the Washington Post. But most of those national news sources failed to comment on the darker sides of this ongoing fad. Locally, few have touched the subject at all, and instead they focus on the updates of the urban livestock policies. But as these policies continue to slacken, more chickens are brought into the city than citizens can afford to take care of, leading to more stray and abused birds in the Twin Cities. Here's reporter Emily Allen, who interviewed one founder of Chicken Run Rescue, a local nonprofit that has taken on the duty of saving these abandoned chickens when animal shelters just can't seem to keep up.
Back in 2000, before the fad began, when I found that they were routinely picking up stray birds or seizing them for neglect and abuse, and I realized that there were no organizations, there was no one there for those animals.
That's Mary Britton Klaus, co-founder of Chicken Run Rescue. When I first met Mary for our interview, I also got to meet Hershey, the chick nestled cozily in a fleece sling wrapped around Mary's neck.
I had to put the scarf on. She decided she was really interested in a freckle on my neck.
Hershey, now 8 weeks old, was born in a hatchery.
They were careless in controlling the temperature while the eggs were incubating. She was born deformed. Her legs, they're angled upward. She can't stand. She can't walk. She can kind of roll around. She goes surprisingly fast on a slippery floor.
Hershey's story is just one of many when it comes to the rescued chickens of Chicken Run Rescue, a local nonprofit organization founded in 2001 to provide Twin Cities rescued chickens with food, shelter, and care.
The individual bird is the whole premise. It's the whole concept behind Chicken Run Rescue. For us, it's this bird. This individual bird right in front of us, and they have a unique personality. They have a history.
Part of this focus on the individual chicken entails naming the birds.
And it's really hard to name the birds sometimes, especially if we get a large group of people, chickens at one time. Oftentimes we will name the birds after the person who brought them to safety.
I was impressed that Mary could point to any given chicken and provide me with a detailed history and a name without any hesitation. I was even more impressed, though, that she could recognize some of the birds by sound. Every time a rooster interrupted our interview, she was able to name it.
And so when we... Yes, I know that's Beard. That was Beardsley.
Aside from viewing chickens as individuals, Chicken Run Rescue also emphasizes the point that these animals are companions.
All of the birds live under the same roof with us. That's part of the philosophy here at Chicken Run, is that you wouldn't do that to your dog or your cat, and these are all companion animals, so everyone sleeps under the same roof.
And indeed, all of the chickens live in the home. On a tour of the house, I was shown a boys' room and a girls' room downstairs, to which roosters and hens retreat to for the night. Each bird has its own carrier with comfy, shredded newspaper bedding, and the rooms are kept pretty clean, too. Upstairs was my favorite part, and what looked like a bookcase or a TV stand upon first glance is actually a mini apartment for the special needs birds that Chicken Run Rescue also takes in. One of the compartments I noticed had tiny sweaters on hangers, much like something you'd see in a dollhouse. These sweaters were for Linaris, a bird with a bacterial dermatitis that has caused her to lose all of her feathers. Even with their hard pasts, there's no denying these birds have a pretty sweet deal now. They live in a home, literally in a home, with individualized 24/7 care. Unfortunately, Chicken Run Rescue can't offer this to every bird someone brings by.
It's getting close to exceeding the human-to-bird ratio that we want to maintain. It's such a temptation in rescue work. It's so hard to say no. But it's really basic math. For every additional animal that you take responsibility for, it's proportionately less attention that the rest of the birds will get.
When the organization was first starting out, Mary said she and her husband/co-founder, Bert, were keeping the chickens in their North Minneapolis home. Since then, Mary, Bert, and the rest of the organization have relocated to a property with much more land so they can accommodate a few extra chickens. However, the organization still receives plenty of calls from people who can no longer handle their backyard chickens.
People's circumstances change. And so, you know, what are you going to do with the birds? So, I mean, there's a lot of things that people who are considering getting them, just from the practical standpoint of this animal's going to live a long time, and they're going to require care and food and vet bills, and what are you going to do if, you know, Junior goes to college and doesn't want to take care of them anymore? So, you know, family circumstances change all the time, and sadly the birds are pretty low on the priority list when a family is in upheaval. So that's, you know, oftentimes that's how birds come to us too.
When Chicken Run Rescue is unable to take in a bird, they still go to great lengths to make sure that bird has a place to go.
Oftentimes, if people find a chicken and contact us, we have set them up with everything that they need to care for the bird and teach them everything that they need to know. They can come here, they can volunteer and learn, and we always encourage them just simply to take responsibility for the bird that they have rescued.
So maybe I wasn't ready to take a chicken home after our interview, but I definitely couldn't object to this last request from Mary.
The house rule is that everyone who visits has to hold a chicken close to their heart and let us take a picture.
Is there a recommended chicken I hold?
Oh, let's see. Everybody falls in love with
it. Want to learn more about Chicken Run Rescue? The organization's website is www.chickenrunrescue.org. They also have a Facebook page where you can learn more about some of the chickens I got to meet for this story. For Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Emily Allen.
That's all for this week's episode. Real College Podcast is produced by me, Jake Maldonado Medina, Emily Allen, Jacob Kowalczak, Alex Schumacher, and Liv Riggins. Managing editor and host is Patrick Sharkey. Real College Podcast airs every Monday at 6:30 on Radio K. You can listen on our website or tune in on an old-fashioned radio. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes, and if you could leave a review and let us know what you think, that would be awesome. Or just let us know what your favorite animal is. We just want to hear from you. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.